We did not realize when we were doing this that we were creating the international symbol for the gay movement.
Here we are back again. What did you think about part one of our mega oral history expose on the hidden origins of the rainbow flag, One Woman Versus the World? My name is August and I'm the host of the Queer Core podcast. As you may remember, this oral history is all about giving recognition to Lynn Sugarbloom, aka Fairy Argyle Rainbow, and the countless volunteers who made the LGBTQ rainbow flag the symbol it is today. We previously discussed the who, what, where, when, and why, but now let's go into the how. How did the rainbow flag get made? If you're interested, here is part two coming at you hot. First up, we have Lee Mentley, the facilitator of the flag, who was deeply involved in the organizational aspects, whether it was getting funding or reserving space for the creation.
And she came to 330 Grove one day with a couple of her friends, Jonathan and Robert, and said that she thought we should make rainbow flags for Gay Day to brighten up City Hall and Civic Center, because it's all gray and cold in June in San Francisco.
I'd make up a dye bath, I'd get it going on the rooftop in the trash can, and now I'd ask the volunteer, okay, keep stirring this, pull it this way, and then when you get to the end, turn it over and pull it this way. Now I'm going to start the next dye bath. And we did that over and over, because I had to rinse them by hand many times before I could drag them off to the laundromat.
That's the star of our story, Fairy Argyle Rainbow, also known as Lynn Sugarbloom, the woman who was the catalyst behind the LGBTQ rainbow flag. If you haven't heard part one yet, what are you doing? Go listen. We're now in part two, and we are talking about Gilbert Baker. Gilbert Baker worked on the rainbow flag with Fairy Argyle Rainbow and James McNamara. That is undeniable. However, Gilbert later claimed that the idea for the rainbow flag and rainbows as a new symbol for the LGBTQ movement was solely his own. Some people confirm Gilbert's accounts. However, others claim that the idea was Fairy's, the woman with rainbow as her last name. Poet, author, and lifelong outspoken activist Adrian Brooks met Fairy when he was performing in the Angels of Light with her. They were a free theater performance troupe where members were forced to reject credit for their work. Going back to painting a picture of the times, members of the Angels of Light embodied their mantra. Here's Adrian. One thing is clear, Fairy Argyle Rainbow, aka Lynn Sugarbloom, has always loved rainbows. Known as the rainbow artist, Lynn was inspired by Edgar Cayce, an American clairvoyant who claimed to channel a source to answer questions on subjects as varied as Atlantis and reincarnation. One of his revelations was about color healing, which uses differently colored lights to balance energy lacking from a person's body, whether it be physical, emotional, spiritual, or mental levels. While this is largely considered pseudoscience, it opened the idea of rainbows as a healing force.
As Christianity shoved down my throat many times, I was like, no. Edgar Cayce was a spiritualist. He did readings and he had a following and he wrote a bunch of little books. And it was lucky for me that for some reason my stepdad had Edgar Cayce books. He and my mom were trying to explore spirituality without religion, you know, non-religion stuff. Or just they read the Bhagavad Gita, which is an ancient Sanskrit book from India. I read it too. It's really beautiful. But so that's how I got an Edgar Cayce book or two or three or four. I read a bunch. I don't know how many, but he wrote one about how colors can heal you.
The committee approved the rainbow imagery and made the decision to make two massive 30 by 60, or maybe they were 40 by 60, we aren't completely sure, rainbow flags to be flown at the Civic Center in San Francisco. There were to be 18 smaller flags that would line the reflection pool, putting rainbows into the gray sky. The smaller flags were designed by different local artists, many of whom were part of the Eureka/Noe Valley Artist Coalition, which was founded by Harvey Milk, Scotty Smith, and Lee Mentley. For the two flags, one would be an 8-color rainbow starting with pink and including turquoise and indigo in place of blue, and the other, a revisioning of the American flag with rainbow stripes. This rainbow flag became known as Fairy's Flag and the New American Rainbow Flag. We'd like to take a quick commercial break to thank our sponsor. Oh, wait, we don't have one and we need one. The Queer Core podcast features my archival interviews. I have over 1,100 files and we have the content to take everything as it relates to gay history and academia to the next level. We need help. Patrons, companies, individuals with a few extra bucks, please go to lgbtqhp.org. You can donate or inquire within. We'll plug your product. We'll write a short and snappy advert. We have you covered. Now, back to Lynn. Making the two original rainbow flags was no easy feat. With a limited budget and limited resources, the group had to improvise and figure it out as they went along. While Lynn had dabbled in flags before, a project of this scope and importance was far beyond her comfort zone. To get over the first hurdle, money, the young artist went to Harvey Milk to ask for help. Harvey Milk was the first out politician in San Francisco and served on the city's board of supervisors. It was helpful to have an ally in the system. Bringing it back from 1978, where we are now, to 1977, Harvey Milk delivered his famous speech, "You Gotta Give Them Hope," at 330 Grove, where the rainbow flag was created. In part, it was about the city trying to tear down 330 Grove and turn the space into a parking lot, which they eventually did. In his speech, he describes 330 Grove as our community center.
And we contacted both Harvey Milk's office and Senator Quinton Kopp's office and told them about the idea and asked if we could find anything, any more funding that could be used for Gay Freedom Day. And actually they found something that I think it was, you know, this is a long time ago, so my brain is a little, you know, off on numbers, but it was leftover funds from the hotel tax from the year before. And I think it was like $1,000, maybe $1,200 at the outset. And that money was given to us to use to create the rainbow flags. And we gave the parade committee the use of the workspace at the back of Top Floor Gallery where they started creating the flags. Now, Gilbert was involved in all of that, but he wasn't at that initial meeting.
Here is John Sirian, a poet and artist who made two of the smaller flags that were lined around the inflection pool at the Civic Center.
She did everything. She did all the dyeing. She did a lot of the sewing. Gilbert did a lot of sewing and a lot of mouthing. And Gilbert was really good. Lynn was, did you ever meet her?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how she is now because now she's an old lady. But at the time, she was a Fairy Argyle Rainbow. And she was very positive and very outgoing. At the same time, she was just a very quiet, gentle soul. So she wasn't very aggressive in any retrospect, but she was totally responsible for creating that whole thing. I mean, Gilbert was just like, you know, if anything else, he'd had spent more time distracting everybody from things, but he did do a lot of work in helping promote it as a gay flag.
– Seen today, the physical creation of the flags is a marvel of modern DIY artistry. For a group of low and no income artists working out of a makeshift workshop, it was truly a labor of love. Key word being labor.
Even though you're doing hand-dyed fabric, you got to get the fabric and dye it. There's all those supplies. And you need hot and cold running water, and you need a washer and dryer. And we did big trash cans on the rooftop of 330 Grove. And to get hot water, because you need hot and cold water for dyeing, we'd heat pans of water up on the second floor. There was a stove. And then carry them up to the third floor and go up this giant stair ladder to the top of the roof and dump that in the trash can. And we do that over and over all day. The hot water, the cold water, we got out of a fireman's spigot up on the rooftop there. And there was a giant drain too. So you combine the hot and the cold water, salt, dye, soda ash, and it's got to be stirred a lot. And it's just like if you had giant cotton sheets and you washed them by hand all day, and then you rinsed them all day, and then you took them to the laundromat. So it takes a lot of time and effort.
And here is actress Bethany, the Princess of Argyle, the woman who named Lynn Fairy Argyle Rainbow.
I could see the whole thing. Then upstairs was Gilbert and Fairy. I think she was lugging buckets. She's always lugging buckets of stuff.
It's important to emphasize that while we're highlighting Lynn Segerbloom, a.k.a. Fairy Argyle Rainbow's journey, that the creation of the original two flags and the smaller ones around the reflection pool at Civic Center was a complete community effort. People were joining for minutes, hours, and days to help make this fantasy a reality. And now, here's Lee Mentley.
How many people were involved in, like, the dyeing of the fabric and everything?
Well over 100 people. We didn't have washing machines. We had trash cans with 2x4s. And we had to keep agitating. There was, you know, we had 1,000 yards of muslin that had to be dyed. And that took time. And the colors had to be really solid. And since it was in cold water...
Yeah.
It had to be constantly poked and agitated with the 2x4s or broomsticks for hours until people would come, and they'd do it as long as they can, then somebody else would come and help and do it as long as they can. And we had opened up the second floor of 330 Grove to people who came from all around the country to be in the parade in March, to make posters and to make banners and put sticks on posters and get things and do art and stuff. And we'd go down and we'd ask, is there any volunteers down here who want to come up and help us mix fabric? And so all sorts of people from all over the country participated. Mm-hmm. Which to me is an amazing story. That's where it came from. It came mm-hmm. from regular people, artists that wanted to have fun and make something pretty for gay people.
Oh, and the American flag thing, we refer to the rainbow stripe flag that just had stripes as James's flag. That's how we referred to it at the time. And then my flag was, I wanted to do stars in the corner, and I flipped the order of the colors, of the rainbow colors, so that they'd be different. On one flag, pink is at the bottom, and purple is at the top in the eight-color spectrum. And then the other one, I flipped it upside down so that purple was at the bottom and pink was at the top. And that's intentional. I wanted to have them be different.
Were the two flags, like, meant to complement each other or be separate?
Yes. Oh, yes. They're a pair. That's a pair. And that's why I didn't want them to look exactly the same. I wanted, you know, you have a pair of eyebrows, but they're each one different. That's just for a stupid example. you have a pair of feet, but each foot is slightly a different size than the other foot, right? They're definitely a pair. And then one of them has stars that I make woodblocks. You have to make the woodblocks first. It's a process. Star woodblocks. and you have backup locks and C-clamps, and then you get the white fabric, and then you line up the stars, and you C-clamp it together. So it looks like a big sandwich, and then you immerse the whole thing in dye. And you have to leave it in there probably about 2 hours or so, or two, three hours. You gotta swish it around a lot. And I wasn't sure if they were gonna come out right either, because it was the first time I ever did that fold. I thought it might work and it might not. I was lucky because it worked. Every dye bath has to get salt and soda ash and a lot of swishing. That's why if you had a washer and a dryer, you'd be way ahead of the game. We could have finished early. That would have helped. But we were working with what we had, you know? It's kind of like, this is what you got. What can you do? I wish I could make smaller versions of this pair again with the same good materials. Oh, I forgot one thing. In the United States flag, in the aqua blue stripe, I sewed a lame star into the stripe.
Wow.
And on, I had lame left over from my Angels of Light costume. So on one side of the aqua blue stripe, there's a star that's silver lame. And when you flip the flag over and you look at the other side, it's gold lame. So I just wanted, like, you know, a touch of magic, a touch of glitter, a little bit of Angels of Light. You can see the silver lame star in one or two of the photographs of James McNamara shows the star stitched on there. That was just like an added, you know, an afterthought.
Here is artist John Sirian.
Yeah, she did that one all by herself. She would be sewing other ones too and helping people, you know, and then training people that would come in to sew. Because we had all kinds of people coming in and wanting to do stuff and get involved. And there was also a lot of conflict going on in there because Lee and Paul and everybody in the building and even around that time wanted to save that building, and we wanted it to become, like I said to you earlier, a community art center.
On June 25th, 1978, the rainbow flags made their debut at the San Francisco Civic Center. They had the effect that their creators had hoped for, bringing light and color to the gloomy Civic Center plaza. People were stunned.
Were you in awe when you looked at them for the first time?
Oh, I was so happy. I was just so happy. We were just like, we came the next day and we did it for the parade.
And were people talking about it?
I think people were really excited, actually. It was just so pretty. It was unusual. You're going down Market Street, and then there's these giant flagpoles with giant rainbow flags on them. And then you head over to the Civic Center, and those are smaller flags and just as beautiful, you know, on the smaller reflecting pole, flagpoles. That pole's not there anymore, but it used to be. And God, it was just looked beautiful.
And then on Gay Day, we went out and flew the flags and blew everybody's fucking minds out. People were blown away. They were so beautiful. They were glorious. And of course, the big flags were, you know, like 40 by 120 feet or something. Wow. Like that, that were on the gigantic United Nations poles right at United Nations Plaza. And so the parade actually marched through those flags to get into Civic Center, just proclaimed that this was their symbol. It wasn't planned. It was organic.
You know, it was so exhilarating because we did not realize when we were doing this that we were creating the international symbol for the gay movement. And of course, the rainbow made all kinds of sense. And for Lynn, it was something she had always done. I mean, her name was Rainbow. Dorothy, the Wizard of Oz. I mean, all that stuff just sort of made sense. And it wasn't until we put those flags up that we realized how it transformed the air itself. And especially when the flags were brand new and they still had dye in the fabric, it sort of made everything sparkle. It lifted people up and you could feel it. And it excited, you know, not just the art community, but the entire community.
Angels of Light photographer Danny Nicoletta remembers seeing the flags for the first time.
It was exhilarating, you know, and it really kind of, you know, became this instantaneous moment of pride that there was this sort of grassroots effort to, you know, create beautiful decorative art that was tied to the political movement at the time. And so the fact that it had the longevity that it did is not surprising on a certain level, although it is against great odds that it became as ubiquitous internationally, historically, as it has.
And that's that, folks. Part two of this Mega Ultra series is a wrap. And part three is coming at you in 2 weeks. My name is August, and I'm the host of the Queer Core podcast. We need your help. I'm just saying it flat out right now. We are grassroots, and that's not sustainable. My audio archive features over 1,100 recordings, and we have the content to pump out heavy-hitting features, but we can't do it alone any longer. Please consider donating at lgbtqhp.org/donate. We are also able to plug any cool and exciting products you may have. We'll write a short and snappy little advert for you to use as well. The Queer Core podcast is produced by David Newtown and features my archival recordings. We also need to give a shout out to Chris Coates, who helped with our script and did research as well. Thanks to Blue Dot Sessions for the audio magic. Until next time, in 2 weeks when we bring you part 3, peace out.